Hey, this is Jack Mangan, and welcome to Deadpan number 103, an atypical, typical Deadpan episode. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. a washed up has-been of podcasting, a.k.a. the Arsenio Hall of podcasting. But of course, you can't spell Arsenio without arse. Well, as I said, this Deadpan is a little bit of a different format than the typical one. So, therefore, apologies to you if you've got contributions in the pipe. They will be heard on a future Deadpan, I promise. Anyway, I hope you'll indulge me for this episode. I'll let you figure out what's going on. It will become readily apparent very soon. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Fractura. 4,400 words. My love, I only regret that I did not survive you. As your feral mind claws its way back through savagery, madness, genius, and divinity, you will continue to rediscover these words, embedded in the code of the universe. Eons may dull your memories of me, but the salvation of our love will touch your every regeneration. No matter the place, no matter how cruel its god, my love for you will be there, your armor against fortune's slings and arrows. I recall the night we met. The skyscraper had impaled that world, protruding 200 stories out at one coordinate, jutting out another 300 at its exact opposite point. The party had been on the 2001st floor, 6 levels down from the building's southern roof, in celebration of this dimension's La Muerte de Dios. Reality had reached its limit of expansion and begun the long journey back inward upon itself. I'd been driven out onto the ledge by desperation, agoraphobia, claustrophobia, and boredom at the party. Seeing no easy way through the crowd to the door, and seeking only a moment of fresh air, I'd slipped out the bathroom window, dangling my feet, then dropping onto the narrow ledge. Apparently it was your self-loathing that had put you out on that concrete precipice. There you were, sitting on the edge, leaning precariously out over the distant streets below, your hair falling forward like a straight black curtain to obscure your face. "Hi," I said, approaching with cautious steps. You ceased your rocking and sat upright. You swept back your hair to reveal red-rimmed, wet eyes and a sweet, embarrassed smile. "May I sit?" You nodded. I sat down at an uncertain distance, and you started talking about pleasant nothings. My anxiety diluted with marvel, with charm, with wonder, until at last I was only enamored. I slid myself marginally closer to you as we talked. Your pathos increased with each inch of distance closed. You began to speak of your pain, to tell me of the hurt that had riven your soul. By the time our lips met, you had told me of your wish for death. "My love," I'd said, pausing the kiss, my words drenched in youthful awkwardness and melodrama, "a soul such as yours must endure." Your lips pressed against mine. You spoke softly, "My soul will endure." It took a moment for me to fully understand what happened next. I felt the sudden, intense pressure in my neck, felt your hands close tightly around my throat. I gasped at your strength, wondered what had triggered this willful, unexpected malice. My hands clutched at yours to free them from my windpipe, but could not break your grip. After long, agonizing moments, you finally shoved me roughly away, where I lay crumpled on the ledge against the wall of the building, reclaiming my ragged breaths. On hands and knees, I looked up into your eyes, which were as sorrowful and as dead as this plains Dios Muerte. "Te quiero," you said, then leaned back. As I struck my hand out, you let yourself drop from the 2001st floor. I dove forward to the edge, but you were already gone, plummeting through the clouds below. I clutched the ledge's rim and looked over, my tears falling after you to the city streets far below.
You are listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is a motherfucking wee. All rocks destroyed in the making of this bumper deserved it.
I'd remained upon that world for millennia, through hundreds of lives full of stagnance and existential boredom. I occupied every form and sentience level that world had to offer. Loved and reproduced and quarreled and died repeatedly. My true mission with each rebirth, to find you again in that universe. I almost never did. The time had come for all beings to abandon our tangible lives and enter the conveyance, forsaking this imploding dimension for the next. The universe had very nearly completed its compression, begun so long ago on that fateful night when we'd met. Fractura del Universo. I joined the queue for the next reality with the heaviness of failure upon my soul. And there, without form, in that channel of light and void between existences, I found you again. We'd just been random strangers, waiting on nearby lines. We existed in a state beyond the sensory. We both simultaneously became aware of the other's nearby presence, a chance reunion at the edge of cataclysm. The bodiless embrace was as sweet as it had been in our physical forms upon that skyscraper ledge. Our beings mingled in the nothingness between dimensions, tasted each other again, and intertwined at the most minute subatomic level. There we danced ethereal for that universe's last remaining years, basking in each other, our souls enmeshed. As time drew on, as our atoms grew into each other, I felt the sting of your life's pain grow more pronounced throughout my being. I soon realized that this was not incidental or merely empathic, that you were purposefully inflicting your misery upon me. I wanted to confront you, but instead chose to remain silent, to forgive and overlook this. For a love this pure, this deep, I could compromise and endure shared pain from one who'd suffered so much on her own. I recall that in the final seconds before reconstituting in the new infant plane of existence, we drifted far from the crowds at the light beam's vacuum center, had flickered out into the fringe zones. I tried to pull us back, but you were bent upon continuing the unbridled dance of the void. Here, against the walls of the dimensional tunnel, we felt the swelling of intense, encompassing heat, as if we'd both been dipped into the roiling broth of the sun. A terror gripped me unlike any I'd ever known, a fear for my mortality in the truest sense, of a death without regeneration. I pulled frantically at you, tugged with all of my strength to draw us both back to the void center, back toward the transitional vehicles to the next dimension, but you resisted my every effort. I could taste your rapture within the scalding heat, your utter joy at the horror in which we'd become submerged. I felt the sourceless fire burning through my entire form, my mind, myself, scarring me, altering me, implanting changes that would never be undone. I cried out, pulling frantically until finally, at the last moment, you'd angrily relented, allowing your resistance to deflate, to be pulled back into the transitional channel with the rest of the relocating souls. Once we'd rejoined our fellow travelers, I became acutely aware of the terrible pain that still coursed through me. The agony was near unbearable. I tried to pull your being into mine, to interweave the threads of yourself with mine, to find comfort in you. But you'd rejected me each time, your coldness rivaling the intensity of that terrible heat from which we'd just escaped. Finally, as we drew near the switching station, you slipped your hand free of mine. In an instant, you disappeared into the crowd. I fought down my agony and called out for you, but could find no response at all. I jostled and shouldered my way through the otherwise orderly lines, repeatedly shouting your name, but to no avail. I finally allowed the flow of passengers to carry me across the platform and on board the awaiting conveyance, alone, once again, without you.
You ready?
Ready.
Jack Mangan.
Come again.
Deadpan.
Jack
Podcast?
Podcast.
There'd been no sign of you anywhere once we offloaded our new destination. This new universe had already begun an ambitious expansion cycle, and there was an infinity of miles to cover to find you. I searched oceans of time, fathoms of space, but never uncovered the vaguest trace of your presence. I began to wonder if you'd succeeded in terminating your being. Sibling aches nested in my bosom, one from the heartbreak of losing you, the other from the injuries I'd suffered at the fringes of the transition tunnel. I knew that both had changed me, scarred me deeply. I sensed that both would one day claim me altogether. None of this mattered. I only sought to find you again. I don't recall how many millennia had passed, but our lives would not touch again until years after I'd given up hope. I'd been centuries into a peaceful, tranquil, happy, satisfying union with another, with whom I'd found a lesser, though not insignificant, degree of love. We lived simply together as oxygen farmers in a primitive undersea village. It was in this particular life cycle, my dear, that you would come in search of me. I'd swum out alone to a floating, artificial trader's island to peddle some of my useless items. You were there. Cries of happiness turned to an embrace, turned to a kiss, turned to passionate love, turned to abandonment of all else. I wouldn't learn until much later that you tracked me to that world and that trading flotilla, seeking again the comfort of our partnership, the depth of our love. We fled the sea and found a quiet pre-industrial paradigm. There, you and I took residence together, in a remote mountain cabin, living simply off of the generosity of this God's grace. Our days there were not without strife, but it was still the most beautiful time I'd ever known. We grew close in this place, talked at length about our experiences. You described to me the roots of your pain, your father, your mother, those who'd wanted you too forcefully, those who'd wanted you too little. When you grew restless beneath the mountain's quiet shadow, we set out to make a new life in some other location across the light years. A few worlds were investigated, then abandoned, until we finally came to rest at the great organism. Once there, we embedded ourselves in its subcutaneous metropolis, a place teeming with as much activity and bustle as our previous home had held stillness and calm. We dove into this new life, you more so than I, flowing gleefully through the veins of the organism's magnificent cities of flesh and bone. We spun through many adventurous generations here, exalting in daring leaps from mindless low creatures to cycles as sophisticated, privileged demigods. Though our environment had drastically changed, our tumultuous love persisted through all of these generations. City life had merely framed the continuation of our happiness and horror together, our shared and mutually inflicted pain and joy, our fighting and coexistence, the insanity and the peace, betrayals and reaffirmations, reveling each day in the rapture of our soul's union. My pain over losing you before had matured and moved on. Its sibling physical ache also grew over time, however, remaining embedded in me through each life cycle, just as we inhabited the great organism. I remained haunted by the wounds inflicted at the end of the former universe. Although we both touched the light tunnel's perimeter, its disease had apparently only infected me, not you. As profoundly sad and angry as you perpetually were, you had remained as healthy as a god. There were days when I felt lost within the feverish heat of my sickness, which threatened to consume my body altogether, leaving only a pile of ash in its wake. During some of these occasions, you comforted me and soothed me, but mostly you just acted irritated by my incapacitation. You avoided me and hailed scorn and derision upon my pain. During these years, I was often forsaken for the sake of others' attentions. I never cried or cursed you for the salt of your cold indifference. I forced myself to accept it. It was only during my spells of terminal illness that I wept over you. And it was during one of these that I left. It broke my heart to go, and if you'd been at home, I'd never have found the will. But as it was, I dragged my weakened body out of the bed, left my every material item behind and drifted away, to surrender to whatever fate this universe would give me. I drifted for ages in a fog of heartbreak, fear, and sorrow, conscious of very little around me. It was not an animal life cycle, for I was still extremely self-aware of my thoughts. It was a plague of the mind, which would either take hold of me and never let go, or eventually release me. I was powerless to influence its decision.
Hello everyone, this is Craig from Technorama. You know, the Star Trek Experience located at Las Vegas Hilton is an immersive experience that takes you into the 24th century. September 1st marks the end of the 10-year run of the Star Trek Experience, but fret not, we are taking you where no listener has gone before. September 2nd, we will release part 1 of a 2-part audio tour behind the scenes of the Star Trek Experience. We will explain the history of the experience and how it all works. So join us September 2nd at chuckchat.com/technorama and watch for our behind-the-scenes audio tour and upcoming video. Don't forget, this is a 2-parter, and video will follow soon.
Of the Star Trek Experience, I can only say this. Of all the attractions I have encountered in my travels, this was the most awesome.
I awoke to coherency at a healing station. They'd rehabilitated me, even as they'd confessed complete bafflement at the cause of my injuries. I never told them what I knew about the transition tunnel's oven-like edge. Upon my full recovery, I stayed on as a volunteer to pay for my medical bills, working amongst the sick and the impure, giving solace and sympathy where I could offer nothing else. My mind was constantly occupied then, but still found time to yearn for you. I confess, though, that the longing was dulled somewhat by time and distance and my practical responsibilities. The hospital eventually thanked me and said that my karmic debt was in balance. I left that place feeling physically better than I had in eons. Invigorated with a health I hadn't felt in lifetimes, yet still stained by a gaping emptiness, I drifted from place to place, world to world, soul to soul, star to star, job to job, house to house, galaxy to galaxy, form to form, lover to lover, life to life, until one day I'd finally noticed myself settling again. I was living a bachelor's existence on a theater world, basking alone amongst millions and the sound and the glow of the films that played across the sky. I eschewed social tendencies there in favor of quiet solitude, only to discover my strong ambition. In lieu of friends, I craved the authority to determine which movies were played across the sky screen. I would still have found yearning for you if I'd searched my heart and mind, but my strongest desire now was for power on that world. And so, I started from the bottom and worked my way up. I delved in with a solitary, determined purpose, working as a humble cleaner, but steadily promoting my way upward. This universe's La Muerte de Dios had passed unnoticed for me. But now, as I ascended the theater's employment ladder, my peers had begun to talk of his impending implosion. Even as my career goal drew within reach, people had begun to let go of their lives. Every day, thousands more joined the exodus to this dimension's way station. This was, in fact, how I'd finally achieved my dream position. The end of days were upon us when my immediate superior finally abandoned her post, departing with her loved ones for the conveyance. The pressure of the steadily shrinking cosmos could already be felt in every atom, but I was determined to realize my career purpose, for however long I had left. I searched through the theater's archive cellar of film reels, well aware that I probably only had time to run one movie before the universe's death. Titles leapt out at me vertically from the shelves, but still, I could settle on nothing. Until I finally saw one that reminded me of our first night together, eternities ago on the ledge of that high-rise. I fed the first reel of 2001 into the projector, watched with awe as its first images played out upon the sparsely clouded night sky. Just as a few stars remained visible in the dissipating heavens, so did I see that a few stragglers remained in their seats, apparently indifferent to the oncoming apocalypse. And as the film's monolith appeared on the cloud bank, I spotted you, seated in one of the theater's back pews. You were turned around, looking directly at me through the projection booth's window. Lightning played across the backdrop behind you, jagged lines streaking across Hal's glowing computer eye. Savage winds ravaged the landscape as the dumb theater planet rebelled in protest to the demise of its home universe. Its tectonic plates quaked in fear. Some theatergoers fled their seats, some remained. The movie continued playing. You and I remained fixed with our eyes upon each other. The planet's natural fury shattered the wall of the projectionist booth behind me. It was only then that I became aware of the most penetrating cold I'd ever known. With surging terror, I realized that this bitter chill was the mirror image of the deadly, roiling heat in which we'd bathed so long ago, at the edges of the transition channel during the last Fractura del Universo. The cold I felt was the end of the universe. The violence swelling in our midst could no longer be ignored. The terrible power forced me to my knees, and then into a fetal position on the trembling floor. Even as the panic welled up in me like bile, I felt your touch upon my flesh, your lips upon my skin, your soul upon mine. You had left your seat, come up to the projectionist booth. I allowed myself to absorb into you as you merged into me. We made love as the Blue Danube played, and the electric, burning, violent chill of the dying universe vanished from my perception. We lay in naked afterglow beneath the projector's beam, even as the fabric of reality tore itself apart around us. We were an island of pure bliss in a tempestuous sea of chaos. The theater had shaken itself to ruins when I finally rose from our embrace. Come, my love. You've restored my desire to live on. We should make our way to the transdimensional channel. I will never let you go again in the next plane. My love will be there for you always. I stood, reached out my hand for you to take. Your smile was utterly devoid of joy. I thought I'd seen love on your face earlier, but now there was only the stark blankness of the abyss. Your attack was too swift. I had no hope for defense. All of these millennia later, I found myself gasping once again for breath in your clutches, while your hands squeezed around my throat. As the theater world fragmented into rubble around us, your fingers remained locked beneath my chin. Gravity had become a forgotten theory. Our forms began to dissipate, even in this murderous embrace. I'd begun to black out, but felt my mind fighting back to retain whatever shape this dying universe would still allow. I was not liberated from your clutch until our bodies finally disintegrated altogether. Although I had no further need for oxygen, it still took a few metaphysical moments to feel my soul breathe again. The rhythmic binary of inhalation-exhalation gently relaxed my taut dread. Your distorted voice echoed fiercely in my mind. My soul will endure. Though I believed myself no longer tied to a physical manifestation, I felt what could only be described as a swift kick to my chest. With no laws of physics or gravity, I felt myself drift off into the bitter burn of this disassembling universe. I flailed a bit, but soon relented and fought instead for stillness, accepting my utter helplessness.
Hello, this is Amy Bowen. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is the way.
The pain was unlike anything I could ever explain to you, my love. As terribly as you claim to have suffered in your lives, I can now assure you that I've endured far worse. Yet even as the unbearable chill consumed me, I found my mind recompiling itself into something new. As I was torn apart in the death throes of this reality, I found my soul continuing to adapt. I realized that I was viewing the very blueprint of the new everything in the atrophying organism of this passing universe. I did not delve too deeply into the code, lest I risk a corruption that would annihilate the very foundation of this ceaseless cosmic regeneration cycle. Even tempted as I was to attempt to find a way to live on in the new paradigm. Instead, I chose to embed this message that you read now, which should recirculate indefinitely through all future universe regenerations, programmed to be discovered by you during each of your sentient life cycles. Even as the cold tore through me, I was aware of others. There were many who'd forsaken the conveyance, who'd remained behind to die along with this universe and with me. Whether they'd been trapped, as I had, or whether they sought to witness the bare code structure of it all, I cannot say. I saw no faces, managed no interactions, was only aware of their fading presences. In those final, final moments, even as the incessant torture had become reduced to familiar routine, as the dead universe's withered corpse had turned to dust and ash, I became aware of something else. A new portal, strikingly unlike that one which had transported us so many times from one old universe to a newborn one. It was a circle of tangible blackness in the void of non-existence. Its pull was slight but undeniable. Whatever I could define as myself passed slowly through this spinning hole. There was no feeling, no sensation, no memory, no mind, nothing. What followed was an age of darkness.
Me, Grimlock, listen to Jack Mangan, deadpan, when me not fighting the Decepticons. Me, Grimlock, a Tyrannosaurus Rexens. Me not dumb. Me, Automobot. Me, Grimlock, love deadpan.
This is Ed from Texas. Fry up your brains on Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
I woke one last time in the body of this man. He'd lived his entire life in a quiet patch of suburbs. I watched from infancy into approaching middle age as the city's sprawl encroached and overtook his hometown, eradicating the natural tranquility, replacing it with metropolitan bustle and concrete vitality. The city, meanwhile, had become a terrain unto itself, with roads winding up the skyscrapers' exteriors like mountain highways. He'd married the girl who lived next door on his suburban street, who'd loved him back ever since their earliest shared childhood, who'd many times fled the horrors of her own house to seek the solace and refuge of his family's home. I recognized you in her, just as you recognize the final generation of my soul in him. We were both just subconsciously influential passengers in these two lifetimes. She toyed with his affections, reveling in the attention that her beauty attracted, using her suitors as pawns in games to taunt him. They both left the small town to pursue further study in their late teens. He traveled the world, learning other languages and cultures. She went to the city's wilderness and lived as a socialite. When he'd finally completed his global education and come back to visit her, he found that she'd been unable to hold the reins of her lifestyle. In the openness of the city's freedom and limitless possibility, she'd courted chaos and disorder. She was living out of control, mired in trouble, and falling fast into the misery that had preyed upon her entire life. He took her home to the small town where they'd both grown up. There, they married and bought a house in the same street where they'd fallen in love as children. But even with your knowledge of my final lifetime in this man, she'd continued to levy her pain upon him, punishing him for his love and his concerns for her. Their love continued to commingle with betrayal, their joy with misery, their peace with chaos. But even as you and she hurt him, he remained steadfast by your side, faithful and devoted to this truest love, sparked uncountable eons before before his birth. Your animosity was not restricted merely to her city disappearances. It was administered to him often at their suburban home, rarely sparing full brutality and force. The cityscape was certainly her favorite destination, though when you felt the need to exercise your sharpest malevolence, you and she disappeared countless times back into that range of skyscrapers, requiring him on a few occasions to go in and pull her out. Including this last time. Even impending middle age had not tamed her desire for trouble, although the kinds of trouble available had evolved over the decades. He found her at a party near the top of an apartment skyscraper. When he'd quietly entered the room, she'd berated him with her most refined deluge of scathing vitriol and hatred. He'd stood quietly until she'd finished, then wordlessly taken her hand and led her outside to the car, which was parked on the snaking skyscraper road just outside. He'd opened the passenger door for her, but she'd seized the keys from his hands, insisting that she drive. With a sigh, he climbed in through the door he'd opened. He and I watched her swerve in her inebriated state down the winding, narrow road, headed for the street far below. She screamed furiously at him when he suggested that she was driving dangerously, and when he asked that she pull over so that he could take over, she barraged him with a volley of insults, letting go of the wheel to strike at him. He fought back to restrain her, but she shoved him roughly into the passenger door. Momentarily free, she then aimed the car at the skyscraper highway's 40th floor guardrail and accelerated. They bounced up off of the metal barrier. The vehicle's undercarriage slid across the railing, sparks flying. The car's spinning rear wheels finally found purchase on another stretch of elevated pavement. With one final screech of tires, they went over. The car erupted in flames when it hit, scorching a black stain into the street surface. My tears were useless against the fire. Her body died. You moved on to another form. I watched you leap into the refuge of a simple creature life, where no surface memories or introspection could reach your mind. The man somehow survived the impact, but his shattered body lies here now in this hospital bed. The medical staff's forced pleasantries tell him all he needs to know about his chances. They offer sedatives for the intense ache, but he refuses them. He spends most of his waking time just remaining still in his bed, an island of quiet amidst the hospital's bustle of noise and activity. And he waits. And while the dying man lies in the bed, this broken, tired old soul waits patiently to vacate his broken, tired body. La muerte de Dios. End of transmission.
You don't know the power of a
deadpan. So, there you have it. That was called Fractura. It is an unpublished short story of mine, and local AZ author who's kind of up and coming, and a buddy of mine, Rick Novi, probably would have encouraged me, if I felt strongly enough about the story, probably would have encouraged me to publish it or seek publication for it somewhere, but I don't know. I just wanted to get it out there on Deadpan, so there it is. If you want to rerun it on your podcast, then contact me. Or, you know, there you go. So, let's do some typical Deadpan stuff. Let's do some greasy jelly bean games. We called it at 535. The predictions were 493, 613, and 636. So, doing our math, the 493 was the closest. And that was Vanamond, who gets yet another greasy jelly bean point. Vanamond, should we ever get together, I think we're going to have a pancake feast to rival that of Hellboy. However, I only have one cat. We should also do... Oh, you hear my keyboard clicking in the background? Keyboard click. We should also do... I know I don't have the cool intro music this week, sorry. Sorry, smarty hotties. Let's do some greasy spoon nipples. Number one, Ditto says, CP, this lonely love, Juliana Hatfield. Keyboard click. Two, Retro says, I'd be down for Reanimator or Gross Point Blank. I've seen GPB a couple of times and parts of Reanimator. As far as being accessible, they might be a little more challenging than the typical. Parentheses, although probably less so than Southland Tales. Close parentheses. Let me throw out a few ideas. Sci-fi geek list, dash, They Live, Blade Runner, Escape from New York, Time Bandits, Baron Munchausen, Contact, THX 1138, Tron. More mainstream general ideas. Searching for Bobby Fischer, October Sky, Stand By Me. Thoughts? Question mark. Alright, well, I'll indulge me for a second. If we do THX 1138, I'm not going to listen to that episode. The rest of Rhett's sci-fi geek list are all pretty good. I've never seen Searching for Bobby Fischer. Would like to. October Sky and Stand By Me are both obviously good movies. As far as Reanimator and Gross Point Blank, I think Gross Point Blank was a hilarious, really good movie. I've only seen it once. I don't remember what would there that would be rife for Palooza-ing. But, you know, if we vote it, that'll be cool. Reanimator, I've only seen bits and pieces, no pun intended, as I've said before, but I'd be up for that. That's going to have to go out on the board. I guess we're going to have to put up the next SurveyMonkey poll for the next Lollapalooza or Deadpan Palooza movie. Dubshack. So the third nipple. Ed from Texas says, that's most excellent, Amy. Fourth, Just a Joe says, I want that table, ellipsis, and I want to get back into gaming, ellipsis, and hang with friends on a weekly basis, ellipsis, and ellipsis. Fifth and final, Just a Joe says, meh, my interpipes have been going out all morning. On a more positive note, ellipsis, I'll repeat my post from late last night. Quotes, women's beach volleyball. Wet, women's beach volleyball. As far as I'm concerned, there are no losers. Close quotes. All right, and that's it. I guess you could already call this outro babble, and I'm going to quickly end the babble. There will also, I know I've been saying this, but, you know, there will also be a SurveyMonkey poll for who's going to be in Duel of the Fates Season 3. I know I have not been promoting this thing very enthusiastically, but, you know, once it's actually in motion, I promise that I'll do my best to make Season 3 entertaining. It will happen. I'm just dragging my feet. And that's about it. Enjoy yourself if you're at Dragon Con or on your way back or whatever. Enjoy yourself if you're not going to Dragon Con. Enjoy yourself if you're going to Copper Con in Arizona. I have some good content for the next episode, including some updates from Amy Bowen, which are important. Next episode, blah, 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 blah. Next episode may not come out next week. Because I'm just predicting there may be no audio next week. But if you feel like playing on the comments page, then please do. It makes me happy. So, if for no other reason, play on the comments page. And yeah, that's it. Send me your stuff. 206-350-TOMI. 206-350-8664 is the voicemail line. Or email it to me, sphericaljackm@gmail.com. That's it. I'm actually going to... What's going to happen here is I screwed up the audio when I put a song called Blood Wine at the end of the T. Morris and PJ Valentine interview episode that was number 101. Thankfully, it was an instrumental, so my voice did not go all chipmunk and be completely embarrassing. But I'm going to rerun that audio. Hopefully, I'll remember to put it at the correct speed to close out this episode, which is going to be a long fucking one. But, you know, that's it. That might even be the first curse word in the whole episode. Anyway, thanks for listening. Deadpan is the melon farming way. You rock. And, yeah. The next episode will probably be a more typical deadpan. All right, that's it. Thanks. See ya. Good night, Mosh. I eschewed social tests.